Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.church.
Hey, before I introduce James to you all this morning, let me just formally welcome all of you again to church. If this is your first time especially, you are a very, very special guest. Our slogan around here is no perfect people allowed. We really mean it. We really believe it. And that's why we gather here every Sunday, because we believe that we are in need of God's grace and forgiveness. And He made that available to us through Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago through His sacrifice. And any one of you who wants that grace, who wants that forgiveness, that's available to you as well. So it doesn't matter who you are, what you've done or you haven't done. We are in the same boat. We all need God's grace. And that's why we gather here every Sunday. So if that's you, you're welcome to join our faith community here. You know, explore faith. Do whatever you need to do to get connected or reconnected with God. We're here to support you. So you are at the right place here this morning. All right? I want to welcome also to our friends joining from all over the world through YouTube and podcasts. Thanks for joining in. Well, James, a lot of you have already known him. He's been with us since we moved to this place. He's called his church home, he and his family. And he is the CEO of a great company called Lead Difference, making a difference in companies all over the world, especially here in WA. He's a great leader. You know, he speaks for thousands of dollars, usually, as companies call him. But
That's not this morning?
Not this morning. You work for nothing this morning. All right. So why don't we welcome James?
Wait, one second. We need to remember this moment. Just remember this moment. It's going to apply later, okay? I promise you it'll be applicable later. Thank you for the welcome, though. It's great to be here. It's really, really fun to be here. It is my pleasure. This is I love giving back to this church, which has given my wife and my kids so much. We love being part of this community. I thought of a great name for the kids' team thing, the sports thing, the United Nations. That should be the name of this church, because this place is amazing. There's just so many different people from different walks, different countries. And we're here in this moment. Somehow, our lives have brought us to this moment, this morning, to talk about what God wants for us and what He's done for us, and how He wants to engage with us. And it just thrills me to be here. And so I hope that this morning we're able to just take a moment to just recognize the beauty that God brought you and me here together. That maybe we can whisper and ask the questions, is it true that there's more to this life than what we see and touch? Is it true that there's more going on beyond our understanding? And so we're going to do a bit of that this morning. Now, as Daniel said, I do work for a company called Lead Different. I started a couple of years ago having no idea what I was doing, but it's turned out that it's worked out okay and it's been a blast. And we get to work with high school students through to multinationals. We work with a couple of churches. So Life Streams, we're doing some work with them. True North is another Church of Christ church that we're doing some work with. So we have a lot of fun working with different organizations. I love talking about leadership. I love talking about every aspect of it. But the most important aspect of leadership is what we're going to talk about this morning. So, if I was to ask you the question, who is the most important person that you lead? And when I ask questions, they're very rarely rhetorical. Like, give me some feedback, because like, I like people talking back to me. I have a 2-year-old, I'm used to it. So, I would love it. So, who is the most important person that you lead in your life? Give me some answers.
Myself.
Yourself, great. Any other answers?
Children.
Children, yep. I got a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I try to lead them. It's like herding cats. Any other answers?
My youth group girls.
Youth group girls, that's a great group to lead. Yeah. Any other answers?
The team at work,
yeah.
Spouse.
Your spouse, yeah. It's a brilliant answer. My wife leads me really well. I'm only dressed this way because of my wife. She led me very well. That first answer that we got, I love that answer. Who gave that? You. Someone in this vicinity. We should be friends. We're going to be tight. I love that answer. Who is the most important person to lead? It's me. See, I don't care what kind of organization or group or family you're working with. If you have got all this training on how to lead them and you know how to lead a team really well, if your own life is full of chaos, bad decisions, and mistakes that are fatal, like where they're costing you lots of things, does the team really going to want to follow you? No matter how much you know how to lead them? They're not. You learning how to lead yourself is one of the most important things that you can ever learn. So today we're going to talk about that with one of the most well-known Bible stories there is. Because I don't know, this might be your first time at church, and if it is, welcome. I applaud you for your courage coming here. I hope we have fun together. But this might, you might have grown up in church like myself. But I got a question, because I think the Bible, stories of the Bible seem to permeate society. Even though you might not have been to church before, if I was to say Noah and the Ark, see, a lot of people in society know that. If I say David versus Goliath, you guys are like, well done. And that's how, there's so many stories like that, that where they've permeated society. Where David versus Goliath, it's this common story. This little boy goes out and fights this big giant and throws the sling, giant, boom, hit in the head, ow, dead. We all know that story, right? Now, we're going to read that story, and we're going to do things a little differently because my company's called Lead Different, and I'm different. And so, let's start. We're going to look at one of the most fundamental parts of leading yourself in this story. Let's rename this story. Let's do this different. We're not going to call it David versus Goliath, because I think there's a more interesting character in this story than Goliath. Sure, Goliath is like this huge giant, but I think the more interesting character and the more interesting battle in here is David versus Saul, who was the king of Israel. You might be like, but they never fought. Correct. Not like a stabby, pokey, shooty fight, punch fight, but there was a battle going on between them and their mindset. And so we're going to explore that. So let's start at 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 1 to 10. We'll read those verses first. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socah in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes, between Socahand and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. So basically, mountain here, valley in the middle, Israelites here, Philistines here, rah, go at it, in the valley. So verse 4, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He was ginormous. Today's terms, he's close to 3 meters. That's a very large human being. Remember when I said Daniel and I were next to each other? So Goliath is like this of me added on top of me. It's a large human. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He was almost 3 meters. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod. I've got to be honest, I don't know what that is, but it sounds big. And his iron and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted at the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and service." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." So this is kind of a bizarre thing. So I actually found a movie which represents this really well. It's got kind of a giant and another guy fighting each other. Anyway, let's show the movie, and that'll give you a better idea of what's happening in this battle in this valley. So let's show that movie now. We got it?
Perhaps you should have a war tomorrow when you're better rested. I should have you whipped for your impudence.
Perhaps you should fight him.
Achilles. Achilles.
Look at the men's faces. You can save hundreds of them. You can end this war with a swing of your sword. And then go home to their wives.
Imagine a king who fights his own battles. Wouldn't that be a sight?
If
all the warlords loved by the gods, I hate him the most.
There is no one else. All right, so that's from the movie called Troy. What you saw there is actually quite a common thing for battles back in the day, because essentially soldiers weren't professionals. They were farmers, people who just worked in jobs, husbands, sons, all these people. And they would go out to battle, and no one was that keen to actually get poked with anything sharp. Like, and so if you have someone giant who's good at poking people, you would say, hey, you go do the fighting, and I'll... Yay, Achilles! Yay, giant guy. I think Bayo of the Sea or something is in the movie. Anyway, but that was how a lot of battles happened. And so that's what we see happening here. Now, just to let you know just how big Goliath is, his armor and weapons, which he was able to move around in well enough to fight other people, so it's not like it's a significant weight for him, it's just something that protects him, 75 kilograms. I don't know if you've ever tried to run a race or move around having another human being on your back. But that's the situation here. 75 kilos, and he's like, yeah, this is, let's go. I'm primed for battle now. That's how big and strong he is. So when he comes out at 3 meters tall with 75 kilos of battle gear on him to say, hey, let's get it on, let's fight, let's do this, come at me, you can understand the reaction that happens next. So in verse 11, let's keep reading. On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Makes sense, right? Giant dude, huge obstacle. We've got to find someone who can fight him. Then in verse 16, we're going to skip a few and go to verse 16. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of the shepherd. He loaded up and set out. Oh, yeah, because we skipped a few more verses. So the battle's gone on so long, because you saw how long that battle took, a minute, right? And so this thing is dragged out for 40 days. What do you think happened to their food supply? It's probably run out. So David's dad, who's quite wealthy, is like, hey, David, take this food to the battle and we'll help be part of replenishing the food supply. And so David says, sure, I'll do that. So then in verse 20, early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of the shepherd, and loaded up to set out, as Jesse, his dad, had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies and ran to the battle lines and asked how his brothers were doing. His brothers were in the army. We skipped that bit before. And asked how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out of his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, Goliath, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. David asked the men standing near him, wait, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And they repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, this is what be done for the man who kills him. Skip some more verses. Then David, what David had said, oh, because then David turned around and was like, well, I got it. Let's do this. Which you obviously take a teenage boy seriously when he says that. But what David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it and struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put his coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened his own sword over the tunic and tried walking around, because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand. He chose 5 stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in hand approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head." I like that line. "I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or by spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you all into our hands." Skip a few more verses where the battle happens. Obviously, we know what happens. David swings the thing, dunk, dead, cut off the head. We'll skip to the interesting part. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is that young man?" Abner replied, "As surely as you live, your majesty, I do not know." The king said, "Find out whose son this young man is." As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul. This is one of my favorite verses in the Bible. With David still holding the Philistine's head. Just picture that. 14, 15-year-old boy, somewhere in there, holding the head of a giant. Just your everyday scene, right? Hi, king, here's the head. "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked. David said, "I am the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem." Okay, so that's how that all went down. We're going to have a look at the two different approaches of Saul and David to figure out how this is Saul or David versus Saul. To help me, because I tried doing this in the first service. If I'm going to write on a whiteboard, this is my natural writing, right? This is what I have to do to write here. So I bought up a scribe. Now, this is my sister, Rosie. Let me tell you a couple of things. She's in her mid-30s. She's single. And I think she's pretty wonderful. So we're going to have a special meeting in the new... No, just kidding. She hates me now. No, I asked her, I was like, "Can I make a joke about us?" And she said, "Yes." I don't think she knew that was the joke. Okay, so let's look at their two approaches. And Rosie's going to write down some stuff. So Saul versus David. So verse 11. When Philistine first comes out and we hear the Israelites' response, all the Israelites' response, including Saul, they were terrified and hid. So an obstacle comes along. An obstacle comes into their way. This giant of a man who wants to kill everyone comes along. And Saul's response to himself internally, peace, I'm out. And he hides. Verse 25. Here's another hallmark of how he responds. He wants someone else to solve his problem. So what do you mean by that? He offers money, and then he offers no taxes, and then he offers his daughter, all to someone who'll take care of his problem. And you might say, why is it Saul's problem? Here's why it's Saul's problem. Saul, we learned earlier in this story, in a couple of previous chapters, when Saul was first made king, he was head and shoulders taller than any other Israelite. So I want you to remember Daniel and I standing next to each other? Where Daniel comes up to about my shoulder? That was Saul. Saul was the giant of Israel. Saul was one of the greatest warriors of Israel. So when one of the greatest warriors of your enemy comes out and challenges you, who's beyond the fact that Saul was king, whose responsibility is it to fight Goliath? It's Saul. He's the giant. Because here's the deal. The Philistines and the Israelites have been going at each other for years before this anyway. Every year they have like a yearly, hey, let's all fight each other kind of get together. And at these get-togethers, battles, what happens is typically, see, if you're tall like me, one thing that you'll know is that whenever you walk into a crowded room of people and you can see above everyone's head, is you find the other person who can do the same thing. And you look at me like, hey, I see you. And that's what happens. And I imagine it's the same thing on a battlefield. Saul and Goliath have seen each other before because they're like, hey, yeah, big dude, yeah, big dude, yeah. And they haven't actually fought. Goliath is Saul's problem that he's trying to hand off to someone else. Then verse 33 and 38, he actually doesn't let, when someone comes along and says, hey, I'll take care of this problem, Saul still remains this like kind of control freaky, like, yeah, wear my armor. Do it my way. Please? Do this. David's like, no, I can't do that. Like, it'd be like Daniel trying to wear my clothes. It'd be long and stuff. I can't do this. So he's still trying to control it. The other thing that Saul does, and it's not mentioned specifically, but Saul forgets who he is. He forgets his experience. You see, Saul's won a lot of battles with God previously. He's won the vast majority of his battles previously. And he's forgotten who he is. He has no memory that, well, God's done this before, so yeah, this will work. And he forgets it. His basic summary of Saul with an obstacle is avoid. And you know what? This actually is a hallmark of Saul's life. When you study his life, so many things come along and he avoids it. And that's his go-to move. Avoid. 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 Now let's talk about David and his approach. Verse 22, when he first enters the valley, the battle scene, he has no armor and no real weapons on him. He's got his staff and his sling. He has no real training. He's just a boy. His first response is to run down to the battle lines. He's a boy. Cool, that's where the battle is. I'm going down there to ask how people are going. Hey, what's going on? How's it going? Da, 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 da. He doesn't belong there. That's not his place. He doesn't have the right equipment. He doesn't have the gear, but he still runs there. Verse 26 and 32, when he asks the question, so what's going to be done for the guy who takes care of this problem? And you can see he's thinking about himself, because David sees himself as the solution to the obstacle. In fact, if you want to put it one way, where Saul's seeing an obstacle, David sees opportunity. He's like, wait, whole heap of money, no more taxes, and a girl. Remember, he's a 15-year-old boy. 15-year-old boys are very interested in things at that time. Anyway, let's keep moving. Verse 38, here's what I love. When Saul tries to give him all his, hey, you wear this, wear this, wear this, wear this, and this will help you. David's like, I don't need these extra things. See, God's taken care of me before, and God's all I need to go into this battle. I don't need to wait for extra resources. I don't need to wait for outside influences to come and say, yes, now you're ready. He didn't have to wait for outside resources. He saw himself as enough. Saw himself as enough. Let's do that. I feel like we need letters to turn, and it'd be like Wheel of Fortune or something. Anyway, maybe that's not on TV anymore. I don't know. Anyway, but what I also love, verse 34 and 37, is David's creativity. See, David was able to say, oh, okay, so there's a big guy down there challenging what and being an obstacle. All right, what can I do? Well, in the past when there's obstacles, bears and lions, God helped me there. Well, God's going to help me again. See, it's not a very quick link to say, oh, I've fought a lion. I guess I can fight a 3-meter giant who's able to carry 75 kilos of gear and stuff like that. That's a very creative problem solving. Creativity kicks in for David, where he's like, oh yeah, I can see how that might work, that he's rescued me from lions and bears, and he can do the same again for the giant. Yeah, let's do this. So David gets creative. Here's the thing about David. If we're going to summarize David's approach to the obstacle, to the problem, to the issue, David's approach is this: engage. Relentlessly engage. The first thing he does when he arrives there, runs down to the battle line. Hey, you take care of this, I'm going down there. When he first hears this call out, it's not on the second or the third or the fourth time that he hears Goliath calling out an athlete, calling out a warrior. He's like, the first time he hears it, he's like, oh, I got this. You see, it's a relentless engaging. There's no hesitation, there's no pause. He goes at it. And these approaches that they had led to different results. So, are we done? Yeah, we're done. We'll leave with that. Thank you. Everyone, let's give Rosie a hand. Mid-30s, single, great girl, loves Jesus, all that. So, the cost of avoidance for Saul. Let's look at the results. There was a cost for this avoidance. Yeah? Saul, there's a result to our actions. There's a result to whether we avoid or engage. And let's look at the cost for Saul. The first was respect. The first is respect. You see, the Israelites, later on when the battle's all done and they're heading home, and the Israelites write this song, and they sing it. And it goes like this. I'm not going to sing it because I don't actually know the melody, but the words are like this. Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed 10,000s. That's like the original diss track. You know, like the rappers today all release diss tracks at each other? That's the original diss track, where people are saying, Saul doesn't have it. I mean, he's good, but David's amazing. Whoa, but Saul's the designated king. There's a massive lack of respect there. The momentum. This battle was, we saw how long this kind of battle is supposed to take. A couple of minutes, right? 40 days. The cost of momentum in the life of Saul. He's just hanging out. Just, oh gosh, not this again. Oh gosh, not this again. Not this again. They're still running and hiding in fear. Self-respect. Here's the deal, and this is a conclusion I'm kind of drawing, but he let a boy go and do his job. That's not someone who respects himself. That's not someone who respects who they are, who they were created to be, the task that God's prepared them for, the task that God's given them. This is someone who's like, I got nothing. Here, you go do it. Go and may the Lord be with you. That was his saying. Go and may the Lord be with you. There's a lack of self-respect. The third thing is money. He's going to have to give David a whole bunch of money. And David's whole family is no longer going to pay taxes. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me, but if you're the person collecting the tax, that's a problem. The other thing it cost him is his daughter. He's now got to give his daughter to David to marry. The cost, in the crazy thing is that the costs weren't just Saul's, and it's the same for you and I. Everyone around Saul had a cost too. And it's the same for you, and it's the same for me. When I avoid my obstacles, when I avoid the things that I'm supposed to engage with, when I avoid the opportunities that are in front of me because they look hard and they look big and they look hairy and they look like a giant who's 3 meters tall, when I avoid them, the cost doesn't fall on me. It falls on those around me too. You see, the cost for Israel is there's a nation now who hasn't had its men, its fathers, its sons, its field, its people to work the fields and the farms. They have not been there for over a month. How does that affect a family? How does that affect a town? How does that affect a community? The whole country is stalling out because one person is avoiding what God is calling them to. And I would say, when you avoid your Goliath, our whole country suffers in some way. The other thing is that within the Israelites, How's their morale? How's their trust of each other? How's their confidence? I'm going to go with all-time low. If you run and hide from a particular issue for 40 days straight, twice a day, how does that affect us psychologically? So how does it affect a community when the people who are leading within that community are running from the obstacles, are running from the Goliaths? While Saul is avoiding, the whole country suffers. In fact, his whole future suffers. Because I want to read to you a summary, a historian's summary of Saul. Best described as a tragic hero, Saul displayed a strength in battle with some ability to inspire his followers that should have placed him high in the ranks of the military great. However, he was unable to solve the Philistine problem. He did, however, prevent complete subjugation of the land. This is a guy who's head and shoulders bigger than everyone else. He's a great warrior. He's an authority. When he wanted to, he could get people to listen to him and inspire them. But he is remembered as meh. Meh. The cost was on who he was supposed to become, the future he was supposed to have. And the same costs apply to us. When we avoid decisions, because our giants aren't big, hairy men, well, maybe they are for you, who are wanting to fight you and like that are 3 meters tall. That might be your situation. But we all have conversations that look hard and feel like they might be difficult. Decisions to end things that we're just scared to make because what happens afterwards? Decisions to begin things because, man, that looks hard. I don't know how I'm going to do that. And when we avoid them, our legacy becomes, they have potential, but meh. So what causes us to avoid? To avoid starting things, ending things, conversations, making decisions. What causes us? I'm going to tell you this. The number one thing is this. It's fear. You might say fear. What's that mean? Okay, it's a specific kind of fear for most of us, why we avoid something. It's the fear of the unknown or the vague. See, things that are vague or unknown are terrifying. You know the movie Jaws, the scary movie with sharks in the water? Okay, it's interesting that Steven Spielberg got really lucky with that movie because the shark was supposed to feature so much more in that film. But when they made the whole bunch of sharks to be featured in the film, they looked awful. And they were already over budget. So Steven Spielberg said, here's what we'll do. We just won't show the shark. And it ended up creating this incredibly suspenseful, fearful experience for those watching because you never actually saw the shark until like a few things at the end. And it was like, then you're like, oh, that looks terrible. And it's almost comical when you actually saw it. But vagueness is one of the biggest causes of fear, if not the biggest cause of fear. So how do we fight vagueness? What's the opposite of vague? Anyone know what the opposite of vague? Details. Specific. You might say, oh, that sounds a bit weird. How do we fight vagueness with specific? So David, he's real specific. Verse 25 and 27, he's actually double-checking. So wait, what do I get if I fight this man? I want this in writing. He's like, what do I get? So I get money, taxes, and a girl. I'm in. But he double-checked. That's really specific. In verse 34 and 36, it describes how he goes into battle. He's like, no, I'm not having that, not having that, not having that. I want 5 stones, my staff, and a sling. That's what I'm taking into battle. He gets really specific with how he tackles the problem with 5 stones, a sling, and a staff. Not only that, but his trash talk is specific. I will strike you down. I will cut off your head. Birds and animals are going to eat your people's carcasses. Even his trash talk is specific. He even says, but you're not going to die by the sword in his trash talk. Even his trash talk was specific. Being specific was a way of life for David. That was the way he was able, that was the reason that every problem he faced, for the most part, the hallmark of his life, was engaging. Every time he came across them, he engaged relentlessly. And so how is David remembered? Here's how the historians write about David. The reign of David lasted 33 years, was the ideal reign for a monarch in the Near East. His skill and leadership so impressed the contemporary great world powers that they did not oppose the growth of his kingdom. David's impact and legacy was legendary. To this day, he is still remembered as the greatest king they ever had. The greatest king that Israel's ever had. Why? Because he engaged. If you want to be known as great, if you want a legacy that lasts, it comes through engaging, despite the fear. When the fear comes, you get specific. So what does this mean to get specific when life feels vague and the hard things are vague? I got a friend of mine, and he called me up recently, and he's getting divorced, and he called me up and he said, he's a Christian guy, he said, James, I need you to pray for me because there's conversation within the divorce that I can't do it. It's really scary for me. I said, hey, I'll call him Jehoshaphat. I said, hey, Jehoshaphat. It's not his name. Hey, Jehoshaphat, I'm not going to pray for you. What? Thanks, brother. I was like, no, I'm going to give you something better. And I said, I will pray for you. I did say at the end. But before that, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get specific about the conversation that you're facing. He's like, I just got to talk to them. I'm like, no, that's vague. So how's it going to start? You're going to pick up the phone, right? He's like, yeah, I'm going to pick up the phone. Then you're going to dial in the number, right? Can you dial the number? He said, yes, I can dial the number. Then when they answer, what are they going to say? And they're going to say, so-and-so family court. And they say, okay, and what are you going to say? He said, can I speak to so-and-so about the name? Can you do that? Yes, I can do that. And then they're going to answer and they're going to say, Jehoshaphat, what do you want? Will you be able to handle that? And he said, yes, I can handle that. And went through every single thing that was going to happen, moment by moment, detail by detail. And he got to the end of it and he's like, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. And he said, I'm going to do this. And he called me back an hour later and he said, I did it. It went awesome. And I think you've drastically changed my future because of that conversation. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, they were going after child support that I literally was more than I was earning. I was like, that's the problem. He goes, and now it's been established as to what's fair and what's right. And I'm actually being able to afford to eat and live. I was like, that's excellent. Can you see how specific can apply to conversations that scare us and decisions that scare us? You see, this story, this battle of David versus Saul, is really interesting to me. But in my own life, it's a battle of me versus me. Because anytime I'm faced with an obstacle, I'm faced with the same battle as you. Engage or avoid. And avoid gets mighty tempting sometimes. Just feels easier. I don't know if I can do this. I can't do this. It's bigger than me. It's hairier than me. It's a 3-meter giant. Oh, but God's been on my side before. Can I handle picking up the phone? Can I handle making the decision? And I walk myself through the specific. See, it costs me every time I avoid or engage. But I get to choose between the fear, but I get to choose between the cost of regret or a cost of effort. So what are the Goliaths in your life? In your family, in your work, within this church community, within your life group? What are the things that we're avoiding talking about? What are the things that we're avoiding thinking about? In this city, what are the Goliaths? It's conversations, decisions, starts, ends. In the trueness to the idea of being specific, I'm going to give us a minute right now, 1 minute, because I don't want this to be a vague thing that we do nothing with. I'm going to give you a minute to pull out your phones, bits of paper, whatever it is. I want to ask you to write down some, because we all have it. Don't pretend that, oh, there's nothing in my life. I engage with everything. We can have a different conversation afterwards. What is something we're going to write down this minute that you can do this week at a Goliath that you can engage with that could change your history, that could change your legacy? I want to give you a minute to sit and think in silence. Write it down about something you're going to engage with this week. You know, God's calling us into a future that you can't get to by avoiding. You only get there by engaging. Your future isn't a place or a destination. Your future is a version of you. You see, I think in an alternate timeline, Saul fights that battle. And he grows as a leader in capacity and capability. He grows in respect. And Israel keeps its momentum. And I believe for each one of us, every time we engage or avoid, this happens. But our future isn't a place. Our future is a better version of you, a different version of you, a more refined version of you, a grown version of you, a version of you that is more like Christ. And the only path to that future is through obstacles that are going to hit you every day, giants that are going to attack you every day, Goliaths that are coming at you. And they're going to come at you and you're going to want to avoid, but the future God is calling you to requires that you engage relentlessly. Goliaths, they're going to win. You're going to want to avoid them. You're going to ignore them. You're going to want the hope they go. They just go away on their own, but they never go away on their own. And the greatest cost of avoiding is you, your future. You see, this is the future that God wants for me and for you. It's a future that Jesus is inviting you to. It's a future defined by courage, by engagement, where giants can't stop you. It's described in the Bible as beyond your imagination. Jesus described it as a more and better life than you've ever, ever dreamed of.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website. Visit therocks.church.